Please silence all electronic devices.
Trump can do whatever he wants to do. Trump infamously said, you know, back when he was running for office, he could shoot someone in the middle of the street. I'm not so sure he couldn't actually do that.
Joe Biden received another 20 endorsements from North Carolina folk this week in the run-up to the Iowa caucuses.
Not that the people on the list are not well-respected folks in North Carolina, but I looked at it more of there's a lot of people here missing.
Any further discussion or debate?
Ah, yes, another Friday edition of the WUNC Politics Podcast. That means the weekend is here, and also it's time to listen back to some of what happened in state politics this week. My name is Jeff Tiberi. Here for the conversation, as usual, are Becky Gray of the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Let's set this thing up a bit. Full disclosure, we recorded our conversation on Friday morning at our Bunker of Truth Fourth Estate studio in downtown Raleigh at the legislature. It's important to note that because as we began our conversation, we were expecting U.S. senators to convene in the afternoon, have a discussion about whether to subpoena additional witnesses, more evidence in the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. So as we began the day, we didn't know what was going to happen and wanted to just shine that light and make sure you knew that before we got going. Anyway, needless to say, here is our conversation about impeachment, but also about some other things that happened this week. Endorsements for one of the leading Democratic presidential candidates and a lobbyist and lawyer, Raleigh-based, who is disbarred. Here are Becky and Rob.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to take a step back. 30,000-foot view question. What is one thing your respective sides or parties could have done better or differently during these impeachment proceedings?
First of all, the Policy Watch isn't affiliated with any party. Obviously, we tend to take a progressive view on this. You know, I don't know what they could have done better, what the people who are bringing the case against Trump could have done. They've been trying right along to get the evidence out there, and I think that if the evidence were fully examined, there would be no doubt about what happened, although I don't think there is much doubt anyway. The sad thing is that I don't think it would matter that much because the Republicans have made a decision that I think really they've taken Alan Dershowitz's sort of insane statement he made this week quite literally, that if the president does something which he believes gets him elected and it's in the public interest, there cannot be a quid pro quo that results in impeachment. They basically said Trump can do whatever he wants to do. Trump infamously said, you know, back when he was running for office, he could shoot someone in the middle of the street. I'm not so sure he couldn't actually do that these days, given the way that the people accept, with the notable exception of Mitt Romney, the former Republican standard bearer in 2012, are approaching this.
Full disclosure as well, the John Locke Foundation is a nonpartisan 501c3 organization, so we don't have a side either, just like Rob doesn't.
Right.
But
and
everybody's got an opinion, and I'm happy to offer that.
I'm not trying to unfairly paint either of your organizations. Generally, Policy Watch would be lined up with many of the views of the Democratic Party. Is that a fair characterization?
Sure.
And the John Locke Foundation generally is going to coincide with a lot of the Republican positions. Not always, but sometimes.
Right. So, not always.
Fair enough. Which is why you have Rob and I on here, right, because hopefully we offer different perspectives and from different sides of the political spectrum, but recognizing that neither one of our organizations are associated with a political party.
Fair enough.
Fair enough?
I'll rephrase it this
okay
way. What is one thing that the Republican side in this case, the defense, could have done better?
Well, I think both sides could have been more reasonable about this. I mean, in my view, this has just become political theater. And the Democrats have certainly played their part in this theater production. The Republicans have played their part. I would have liked to have seen everything toned down. I would have liked to have seen questions answered early, simply with some cooperation and some actual real dialogue with this. I wish the whole thing hadn't happened, to be honest with you. I wish that the Congress were concentrating on the problems facing the country that they were elected to address rather than trying to unseat a duly elected president. But here we are. Here it is. This has gone on for months. And, you know, I will say, you know, it has preempted some of our discussions here the last couple of weeks from the radio because NPR has done a great job of making that available to the public. But I, for one, am just kind of tired of it, to be honest with you, and wish they would just get on with their business.
Republican U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, I'm going to quote some of what he said Thursday night. Quote, Trump did it. That's obvious. But it's not serious enough to remove him 10 months before the election. Close quote. I'm going to offer one more quote here. I'm toggling between screens. Quote, if this shallow, hurried, and wholly partisan impeachment were to succeed, it would rip the country apart, pouring gasoline on the fire of cultural divisions that already exist. It would create the weapon of perpetual impeachment to be used against future presidents whenever the House of Representatives is of a different political party. Close quote. That's Lamar Alexander, Republican of Tennessee, and considered to be something of a swing vote in these proceedings. How much of what Alexander, of what I just read of what Alexander said from last night, would you agree with?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I think it's very disappointing. Alexander had been pointed to as someone who is a man of some measure of principle. He's not running for re-election. I understand the concern about perpetual impeachment. We are living in very divided times, but this is a truly extraordinary act by a truly extraordinary, dishonest man who has a con man who has taken over the White House of the United States and who has denied that he did this all along, and now even his own party said, well, yeah, he did it. He traded his own personal political well-being against the well-being of the entire nation. I don't know what more a president could do that would be an impeachable offense than something like that. I understand the point that, well, the next election is right around the corner. That's for sure. But the Constitution doesn't specify that we only impeach when elections are a long way off. It specifies that we impeach for high crimes and misdemeanors. And I don't see how anybody that's a reasonable person could see this thing as anything other than a high crime.
Oh, I think that Lamar Alexander hits the nail on the head. I mean, I think this is exactly what this is. The question is, you know, what are impeachable actions? What are impeachable crimes? And, I mean, that's what this is all about. People who dislike Trump are going to say, quite frankly, no matter what he does, he ought to be thrown out of office. They are very unhappy that he was elected and have become less happy throughout his presidency. Trump supporters are going to say, no, he hasn't done anything wrong. In my view, and I mean, this is just my personal opinion, you know, watching, and I haven't watched every minute of it. I mean, I will tell you, I would not consider myself,
me either,
you know,
full disclosure,
at the top of all of these arguments. It just doesn't seem to me that this is an impeachable crime. And I think that to Alexander's point that, you know, we have an election in 10 months. If you're unhappy with the president, there's a way out of this. This is why we have elections. This is what the founders intended. So it just seems like a lot of political theater that has been directed to give one party an advantage over another going into this election. I just kind of go back to what the founders laid out and the integrity that we should expect in our elections and the respect that we should have for the decision that voters make. And if you're unhappy with it, there's another election in 4 years. Find a good candidate, sell your message, sell it to the American people, and you know, we'll have a go at it the next election. That's kind of how our country works.
This is the same party, of course, that impeached Bill Clinton for apparently lying about sexual relationship that he had and sought to remove him from office for that offense, an offense that had nothing to do with national security, that had nothing to do with the well-being of the country. And here we have a president of the United States who sacrificed the well-being of the entire nation and its security and then lied about it repeatedly, is still lying about it, refused to turn over the evidence that would perhaps show even more bad actions. I mean, it doesn't matter that the election is coming up. The Constitution talks about when presidents or other public officials act in ways that are inappropriate.
And I agree that the Constitution does say that. The question here, and the question that I still don't think has been answered, is what are impeachable crimes? And that seems to be the gray area.
Well, it's high crimes and misdemeanors.
What does that mean?
Sure.
And if you don't like Trump, then I think it means what Trump has done. If you didn't like Bill Clinton, it meant what Bill Clinton did. I just think it's dangerous to get into this. If we're unhappy with an election, the party that lost gets to, you know, have this theatrics that we've had the last.
But it must be said, the Democrats Pelosi and the Democrats resisted the temptation, resisted entreaties to impeach Trump for years, actually, because there have been many coherent and strong arguments that Trump has committed other impeachable offenses early on in his presidency, maybe even before he took office. And so, I mean, to say that this is all politically driven, they were sort of dragged kicking and screaming to this. There were many Democrats who didn't want to do it, but felt that it was their constitutional duty to do it. I take them at their word when they say that.
Joe Biden received another 20 endorsements from North Carolina folk this week in the run-up to the Iowa caucuses. The former vice president is, of course, seeking the Democratic presidential nomination. Among his latest backers, U.S. House Representatives G.K. Butterfield and Alma Adams, as well as former UNC system president and President Clinton chief of staff Erskine Bowles. How meaningful Do you view this round of endorsements, Becky?
I'm kind of mixed on endorsements, to be honest with you. I don't know how persuasive they are to voters. I understand why candidates want to get those. They want to get that support. I was a little bit surprised, to be honest with you, for the establishment candidate from the Democratic field of the presidential candidates. I thought that these latest endorsements, to be honest with you, were a little bit weak if you look at the establishment Democrats in North Carolina. I don't know what that means. Maybe people are waiting to weigh in. Maybe some of them weren't asked. To add to that list, I think Rufus Edmiston was on the list of endorsements for, and I think clearly and a moderate establishment kind of Democrat. So that was one of the things that I was looking for as I looked at that list. If he is the moderate establishment candidate, what does that look like from North Carolina's viewpoint?
You said some omissions or an incomplete list. Who wasn't on that list to you?
I don't think Jim Hunt has weighed in on that. I always think of him as, the grandfather or the statesman of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Of course, the State Democratic Party has not weighed in on any, I don't believe.
And they don't typically weigh in on primaries.
May not. Right. Yeah. Where's Roy Cooper on this? Who's he going to get behind?
Generally incumbent Democratic.
Josh Stein is another one when you talk about, again, I was looking, and not that the people on the list are not well-respected folks in North Carolina, but I looked at it more of there's a lot of people here missing.
Joe Biden, first of all, it needs to be pointed out, is a formidable candidate. He remains a very formidable candidate in the Democratic primary. A lot of this is going to happen really fast in the next few weeks. We're going to have somebody win the Iowa caucuses, and everybody will get very excited, and they may or may not go anywhere from there. It seems to happen quite often that whoever wins in Iowa, sort of disappears later. Biden is beloved and very strongly supported amongst African-American voters who are critical to winning the Democratic nomination and to winning the presidency for a Democrat. Although it's interesting that amongst African-American voters below 35, Bernie Sanders is actually favored, which is an interesting development because Sanders traditionally hasn't had as much support from African-American voters. I think Biden it remains very formidable. I'm not surprised that Governor Cooper isn't getting out in front. I think a lot of Democrats are still in the any functioning human being camp that they'll support any Democrat who can win the nomination because they're so opposed to Trump. But we'll just have to see what happens with Biden. Obviously, I think he's the favorite in North Carolina. I think it would be a major upset if he doesn't win the North Carolina primary, whatever that is, 5 weeks from now.
Less than five. Yeah.
One thing that we may see that may be interesting is as these candidates come into North Carolina, who's on the stage with who? So we may see more of that. I would suspect that we would as we get closer.
I do agree with you, Becky, that I think endorsements aren't as important as they used to be. They're great for headlines, and they lend a sense of momentum to a campaign, but one primary that goes the wrong way can take that momentum away very quickly.
And in this case, with particularly the Democratic candidates, but I would argue that it's the same thing on the Republican side with the Trump, it probably means more for those who are doing the endorsing than the endorsement means to, will G.K. Butterfield use the fact that he is a Biden guy in his reelection campaign? Will we see some of that? We've seen Senator Tom Tillis is now a Trump guy.
Clearly.
He has declared that he is. So, when you think of those endorsements, sometimes it works the other way as an influencer.
Quick follow-up. Now less than 5 weeks from the Super Tuesday primary, now less than 2 weeks until one-stop early voting gets going for the Super Tuesday primary. If you have one, might be a throwaway here, an observation or something that you've noticed in recent days or the last week from the campaign trail.
Well, one thing's for sure. You can't turn on your podcast or a TV broadcast or a radio broadcast without hearing an ad from Mike Bloomberg. It's amazing how much the man has spent on ads. And I assume it will result in some sort of performance for him. I don't sense that he's about to break out and surge ahead in the Democratic field, but he... his ads are solid. They're really good. And I think he's definitely – some people are listening to him. He's getting to some of the voters.
One thing that I'm watching, too, because so much of my work is at the state level, is there are some interesting primaries in the Council of State races here in North Carolina, and also some of the legislative races have some interesting primaries. So I'll be watching that. Also, you know, Jeff, I think something that I'm going to be looking at, too, is just from a numbers standpoint of the drop-off votes that you have. You know, there's a lot of interest in the Democratic primary for president, for sure. Of those voters, how many go all the way down the ballot to select a primary favorite in Council of State or legislative races?
Right.
So, you know, that's the other thing. And I think that might give us some indication, too, of that drop-off vote going into the November election. I think that's – it's sort of a sub-factor and maybe something that's, you know, second or third tier of interest. But – if we have a lot of voters who go to the poll who are driven to the poll because of the very top of the ticket but don't complete the entire ballot, what kind of repercussions does that have on some of these statewide races and then district races for the legislature, but also even local races and then judicial races as well?
Drop-off can be a major factor in races. It hurt Pat McCrory. It was one of the things that hurt Pat McCrory in his reelection bid 4 years ago. And I would just note, just hearing you talk about that, it reminded me of the lack of drop-off that we saw in 2018 when it pertained to the constitutional amendments. And I remember some people leading up to that midterm, as a reminder, I think a lot of listeners will remember, we had six proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot, and some strategists said we might see 35%, 40% drop-off by the time people get there. And there really wasn't that. I mean, it was like less than 10%, I think, on several of the questions. So
it's somewhat shorter ballot, too. But
Yeah.
It's just an interesting factor when we're talking about this and what to expect. Just kind of a side note, if you will.
I'd like to turn our attention to something perhaps of an inside baseball issue. This week, a Raleigh attorney and lobbyist pled guilty to charges of unregistered lobbying. Mark Bibbs was indicted on felony charges for improperly lobbying lawmakers on a bill that would have made charges to bail bonds regulations. The indictment came a couple of years ago. The guilty plea came this week. In a statement, Bibbs said that he saw evidence much differently from prosecutors but was putting his children first. He also said, quote, "Thousands of lobbyists commit this registration violation each year, and not one has ever been charged, ever," close quote. Do you believe that to be true?
I don't think so. I don't think that's true. Although I do think that there's lots of violations going on. I think we need a stronger enforcement of these laws. I thought it was a little inappropriate for Mr. Bibbs, a man who's just been convicted of a felony, to then launch into some sort of diatribe against Elaine Marshall, who's a, you know, a very dedicated public servant, and he made all sorts of wild accusations against her.
The Secretary of State who led the prosecution
of
this.
I mean, this the lobbying, we like to think that when Jim Black was convicted that this mess was cleaned up, but it remains a problem in North Carolina. It remains the fact that big money worms its way into our politics. And a lot of it should be more carefully regulated. And in particular, when you're talking about the bail industry, which is who Mr. Bibbs was representing, and of course, Mr. Bibbs is an old roommate of House Speaker Tim Moore. It's a dirty business, this bail business. It probably needs to be abolished in our state. It's been abolished in other states. It's been preying on people. The fact that he was representing them in frequent communication with the Speaker and then had this conviction, it doesn't look good for North Carolina politics. It's a troubling development, and I hope that this conviction will teach him to perhaps learn the error of his ways.
Well, I think the problem is there's some ambiguity in the definition of lobbying. I think from the facts that I've seen in this case, and, you know, bail bondsmen, I mean, there's all kinds of interest who have interest in legislation, and they should have their voice heard, and if they want to hire someone to represent them, particularly, you know, there's a lot of attorneys in the building that we work in doing that. There is this requirement that you be registered. But I think that, and I think from the facts of this case, it seemed clear to me that Mark Bibbs was clearly lobbying on behalf of his client. I don't think it even matters in this case who the client was. I mean, they have a right to their free speech and representation. And you know, if you're a lawyer and you're down in this building, I think there's an expectation that you understand what the rules are and that the lobbying registration. But here's where it does get a little bit tricky is when you define what lobbying is. And there is a difference, and we know that, you know, there's an attorney who has been paid money by a special interest group to come and make their interest and present those to lawmakers with the intent of influencing legislation is very different than, like, you know, a group of moms come down to speak to their legislator about getting, you know, a traffic light in front of the elementary school where their children are working. You know, so again, are they lobbying? You know, the definition, I think, and when Rob says we need to increase the penalties, I don't disagree with that. I would argue that we need to clarify exactly what lobbying is. And just for, you know, our listeners too, it is not tremendously burdensome to register as a lobbyist. Elaine Marshall's website, the Secretary of State, it's very easy to do. I mean, there's steps that you take through it. I forget what the fee is. I mean, it's a pretty nominal fee, particularly if you are getting paid to lobby at the General Assembly. It may be $100. So, I mean, it's not like this is some terribly complicated, burdensome process that you have to go through. But, you know, I think we should look at that definition. What I would hope is that no citizen would be with this kind of news and this gentleman being convicted of a felony for not registering. I just hope that it wouldn't have any kind of chilling effect for someone to feel like they couldn't approach their legislator or make their voices known, or a group of citizens, whether it's a homeowners association or any concern that folks would have, that they would not be, there wouldn't have be a chilling effect with people participating in the process.
I'll just say that a lawyer like Mr. Bibbs, there was no question. He knew what the rules were. The law, there may be some ambiguities in the law, but again, Becky's right. There was no doubt that what he was doing was illegal, and I don't think that there's any I don't think any average citizen is going to be in the same category as someone like
this. No, I just hope that the news of this,
right,
if someone reads this in the newspaper and thinks, well, gee, I don't want to take a chance that I might cross over some sort of regulation and get in trouble. That's my concern.
If you're getting paid to do it, take a look at the rules.
Right, yeah. Right.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, you
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, guys.
Pretty much each Friday, we drop this Week in Review State Politics podcast through the WUNC feed. If you subscribe already, we're glad to have you along. If you don't, consider doing just that. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and do me a favor, if you're able and willing, and tell somebody else about the podcast, a neighbor, a colleague, a friend, a sworn enemy. I don't care. Just somebody who you think might enjoy engaging with some hopefully good political discourse each week as we take a listen back to North Carolina politics. Coming up next in your podcast feed is a conversation with Cal Cunningham. He's one of five Democrats seeking the nomination in a U.S. Senate race in that Super Tuesday primary that is now, yes indeed, less than 5 weeks away. Early voting, as I mentioned, less than 2 weeks away. That's coming early next week. Just a few days ago, we dropped a conversation with Erica Smith. She's one of the other front runners in that race, so I would encourage you to check out both of those conversations. If you have gripes, critiques, questions, comments, whatever, find me on Twitter, J_TIBS. Stay up to date with some of what's happening in North Carolina politics throughout the week at our website, WUNC.org. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend.